Han satt der i McCaféen med pensumboka og en latte, og for tredje gang bladde han en side tilbake og leste den på nytt. Og igjen var det som om ordene som sto der bare stokket seg og ikke lenger hadde noen betydning. Men han så at alle andre som satt der klarte å jobbe. Så hva var egentlig problemet hans, annet enn det åpenbare? At eksamen var tre dager unna, og han bare en tredjedel inn i pensum. Og det er sånne ting som gjør at noen tar opp en vindusplass her hele dagen. Men sånn er livet. Og McDonald's er bare en liten del av det, tross alt.
I helga spiller Michael Monroe på Rock the Boat. I den anledningen skal vi høre igjen et jernverkintervju fra 2016. Jeg heter Helle Stenkløv og gir deg den finske legenden Michael Monroe.
Hei, dette Agnete fra Indie Recordings. Har du sjekket ut de nye låtene til Ribosio og Diabolical? Ikke det. Vel, dersom du liker gammel Perfect Circle, Ribosio midt i blinken for deg. Om du mer i det fandenivoldske hjørnet, og foretrekker ting i gata av Behemoth og Enslaved, bør du sjekke ut svenskene Diabolical. Begge låtene på Spotify, og platene kan du bestille på shop.indierecordings.no. Jernverkelyttere får 20% avslag når man bruker promokoden Jernverke. So long, suckers!
Hello, this is Michael Monroe, and you're listening to Jørn Verket. Keep on rocking, dig it, baby. All right, stay cool.
Bornut var en englant, ja, det.
That's right, English is yeah. Good.
So now I'm here with Michael Monroe. I guess you want to call.
This is he.
Yeah.
Mr. Michael Monroe in the house. Check it out.
At Olsen på Bryn in Oslo.
Olsen på Bryn, yeah. That's the place. Olsen på Bryn, yes.
You ready?
Yes.
Okay.
Ready. So we'll, ready.
We'll just begin. Start at the beginning.
That's always a good place to start.
Yeah. could you just tell me how it all started with you becoming a musician into a band? You play a lot of instruments, and
you get a spare couple of days. Oh no! It was really. I'm trying to keep it short. Instruments. Well, I was from a musical family. My grandfather was a cello player, a professional musician, classical musician. His father was an oboe player, also classical. Actually was friends with Sibelius. John Sibelius was his acquaintance. They were in pen pals, and he had actually an oboe that used to belong to Sibelius. And he was had taken theory lessons from the master himself. Anyway, so that's my mother is very musical, and she plays the piano from the notes and stuff, but she's not a professional musician. She worked at the radio in Finland, as my father did. My father was a radio announcer. And, well, you know, I got into, as kids, they had like children's days where we got to do some speaking there in between shows and stuff. Me and my two older brothers, I was about 7 or something. That's my first brush with the show business. But really, I heard classical music when I was 5. My mother made me take piano lessons. There was a guy in a building we lived who gave some piano lessons. And I always played better without the notes. And I said, can I just play it by ear from hearing it? And one day I asked that the teacher. I said, yeah, go ahead. And it was perfect. So I said, yeah, it's a pain in the ass reading the notes. You know, I'd rather just, if I could... I'd be a bit of good hearing, not absolute hearing though, but still, I saw a rock and roll, well, I heard some, maybe saw some Stones or Beatles or something somewhere on TV or heard them on the radio, but then I saw Black Sabbath on TV, 1970, live in Paris, 1970, that's when I thought, wow, what a sound and what a cool thing they had, and the singer, totally nuts, long hair, going nuts on stage, I thought, I could do that. So it's actually Ozzy Osbourne who started me off from the beginning. But then I discovered Alice Cooper, the Love It to Death album. My father used to just buy us the records and probably went to the store and record store and asked what do kids listen to in those days, So we had Led Zeppelin 2. That was the first rock album in the family. And Black Sabbath, I saw them on TV. I was like, wow, that was a cool band. And then I bought their records as my monthly allowances. I always used to save them so I could buy the next Black Sabbath album. But then Alice Cooper, Love It to Death. My father bought that for my brother. And I saw that band was like the coolest band, in my opinion. such a cool image, and Alice was so great. I mean, such a cool voice and style. And he was the guy who the parents wouldn't want their kids to go and see an Alice Cooper show because he was like a threat to society and dangerous and all that, you know. So I liked that, and that's when I saw Little Richard always be my hero. He was the first one to, I mean, what a hero, really. He's a pioneer, and he was wearing makeup in '50s, being gay, wearing makeup and go totally wild and uninhibited and uncontrollable. That was like the system didn't want him to be the hero for the kids, and that's why he's a hero, because he stuck to his guns and did his thing and didn't give a shit. They tried to shove Pat Boone down people's throats, and he was just like, fucking, these songs we're singing is still so much stronger, that, you know, the kids wanted the original thing, the real thing. He is still the best rock singer of all time, I think, in my opinion. So rock and roll, you know, I got into more. Deep Purple Fireball was the first album I actually owned myself. There was Mott the Hoople, The Faces. The first rock show I saw was Slade in Helsinki in '72, I think it was. It was loud as hell, and the acoustics were horrible in that place, but... And I was like, me and my brothers, we were deaf when we came back home. My mama said, "Oh, didn't you have fun? You looked like all wiped out." And I said, "Oh, yeah, it was great." But then I saw The Sweet, and then I saw Suzy Quatro at the time. But, you know, those were the bands that were happening then. And I just got into rock and roll. I went to, you know, Alice Cooper, Little Richard, all that. And then the Rolling Stones, I got into. That was when I decided that I'm going to have a band with two guitarists, when I saw The Stones with Brian Jones and... You know, the double guitar thing, it's nice. I mean, the way, like, Keith and Ronnie, the way they're weaving, you know, playing, I just love when that happens. AC/DC, the first album, High Voltage, you know, I was like, oh, rock and roll singer, it's a long way to the top, you want to rock and roll. And those lyrics, that was, like, real. Bon Scott, there's a hero, too. One of the greatest singers of all time. He had his attitude and his sense of humor, the twinkle in his eye. Amazing guy. It's just a shame that all those great ones go so young. But mind you, I loved Geordie, the band that Brian Johnson had before. You know, in 1973, Geordie, Hope You Like It, that album is still one of my favorite albums of all time. And the singing on that record is the best, in my opinion, the best Brian Johnson's ever done. So, anyways, and the punk thing came. There was Johnny Thunders and the Heartbreakers, one of my favorite bands, even more than the Dolls. I think we were into them, but the Dolls, of course, were great. Punk bands, The Damned, the Pistols. I got into the Ramones, and some of the favorite bands that my favorite bands. I like all kinds of music. You know, punk band called The Undisputed Truth. But we discovered, me and Andy, in a second-hand store, we found this record with this five black people floating in space with black and white afros and silver suits, platform boots, and painted their faces silver with all this, like, it's really kind of makeup. The album was called The Undisputed Truth, and the name of the band, and Higher Than High. And it was the coolest. We bought it because of the cover. It's like, this got to be something special. And it was so good. That's the best punk, you know, you can find. And Norman Whitfield had produced it. He produced The Temptations and Psychedelic Era and all that. But, yeah, music, reggae, I love the Peter Tosh and Dennis Brown and Bob Marley and into some obscure stuff. I mean, I like Patti Smith, the female singers. Marian Faithfull's Broken English is one of my favorite albums. Also, Little Feat, the Sailing Shoes album, that's my favorite. One of the greatest albums as an entirety. Roxy Music, Avalon. As a whole, is a great album. But I love their stuff from that era also. And gosh, there's so many. There's so much stuff. I like music so much. There's so many bands to mention.
You came to form your own band because of all this.
Yeah, Hanoi Rocks was my dream. It's my family kind of. We grew up together. With those guys in Hanoi Rocks. It was a very special band. We had a special vibe, and really our attitude and style was something that's nobody's really come close to that kind of thing since then, even though it's a lot of attempts I've heard it said that a bunch of bands tried to kind of take what we had and do something with it, but I think they missed the point. I'm talking about the LA scene and the hair metal bands. that I get blamed for. I get blamed for and notice the emphasis on the word blamed. I think if they were trying to copy Hanoi, then, or they're trying to do what Hanoi was doing, I think they, most of them missed the point. But then again, there was a good, a lot of good stuff that came out of that time also. Like Guns N' Roses had the right attitude. They were heavily a lot influenced by Hanoi in a big way, but they had their own thing, and they just took the right aspects of Hanoi, the attitude and the punkiness, and they had their own thing, their own style. The music was a bit heavier, more like Aerosmithy heavy, and they had a rougher kind of image. They were a bit like, wasn't as, Hanoi had a really fine tune sort of style. Everybody was a real strong individual. There was no like studs and leather and, you know, something, or a uniform you could put on. It's like, just wanted to encourage people to be individuals, be themselves. Most people will look best with a crew cut and t-shirt and jeans, you know. My style would not fit most people. It's great. I mean, I'm a freak, you know. So sometimes when I look at people's time, at that time, they're like, even if you were a 300-pound truck driver, you had to, like, blonde hair, those teased up and eyeliner, you know. It's like, oh, well. I just started teasing up my hair because I wanted to be a little wavier because it was boring and straight, you know. And I started bleaching it because this is the color I used to be when I was, before I was 10 years old. I was 8, 9, well, my hair used to be this color. But then I don't tease my hair. I haven't done that for years, so just spray it a little and make it like that. But at the time, back in the days when I didn't cut it, sometimes it became really big, like Johnny Thunders in the first New York Dolls album cover. But maybe that, you know, was big hair, but I never meant to have that. I mean, like the best hair was Neil Smith, the drummer of the Alice Cooper band. He had hair down here, and it was perfect. But I used to dye my hair. I used to have black down the bottom, almost down to my waist, and blonde on top, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, Hanoi Rocks had a very special thing about it. And there was a family vibe, and we were young, and we grew up together. And when the drummer got killed in that horrible accident, and it was just, we weren't strong enough to keep it all together. We just went to bits. My dream was shattered. Sammy Yafa left the band also, so not only did we lose our drummer, we had no bass player. Me and Andy and Nasty weren't connecting strong enough to keep it going. So I wanted to just maintain the image, the integrity. That's what it's all about to me, and I wanted to maintain that reputation the band had for being, you know, not compromising and not taking the easy way out to make it big. We just did our own thing and went the hard way, and I'd rather have the band break up than have it become a parody of itself, or have some people in the band who weren't really, who didn't deserve to be in the band, you know, had the wrong attitude. So I'd rather than have it be put to rest. And So the same thing with my solo career. I started doing writing songs. Actually, I always wanted to write, but then in Hanoi, Andy McCoy always used to say, well, I got a better one here. And I said, okay, well, I just kind of gave up on writing. But then again, I really came onto my own as a songwriter during my solo years, as I started writing lyrics that when I finally decided, okay, I'm going to continue as Michael Monroe, and not to have something more to say than just some superficial hoopla, blah blah blah. You know, I had to have some kind of content in the song in order for me to sing it convincingly, getting into it. And I like to raise questions, you know, bring up some points that may be valid. Maybe people will think about some things, you know, because, oh, wait a minute, I never thought of that before. Without being too political or anything, I mean, I've got no answers or advice for people. It's like in life in general. But I have some good points, I think, edifying things to say in lyrics. And that makes me feel like, okay, I have a reason to be up there. I have something to offer, you know.
So you're kind of now you can be a dictator over your own material, but when in Hanoi Rocks you had to compromise more between all the guys?
No, actually, I wouldn't. First of all, dictator is not the right word to use, but I don't really dictate that much. I do actually give up everybody in my band, my current band, and in this solo thing, I give everyone a lot of space. I'm a band-oriented kind of guy, so it's kind of ironic that this band is called Michael Monroe, but it's really a band situation. It's a democracy, and there's everybody writes. I encourage everyone to write. I've done a couple of albums where I played everything except for the drums. I wrote all the songs, and I know it's what that's going to sound like. So I'd rather collaborate and have more input from other people, and then it's more exciting. And it's better in the end, you know. You have different points of view, and there's some great writers in this band. Steve Conte was especially a fantastic songwriter, and Rich Jones has got a great style of writing, and you know, he's in the band now, and he's after Ginger and Dragon. The rest of the band's been the same since 2010. So there's a lot of creative energy in the band, so I like that. I like that situation better than you know, having to telling everybody what to do. It's boring, you know. And I don't have much of an ego, I can say that for a fact. I'm sure someone's going, yeah, right. Well, singers do often, some singers act like jerks, I gotta tell you. Oh, in business, in the music business, a lot of bands, especially in the 80s, I was almost embarrassed to say I'm a rock singer, because they acted like a bunch of phony idiots, you know, posing and being like, oh, we're so wild and wacky, sex, drugs, rock and roll, party hardy, dude. Oh, lucky they could play on the side. Most American rock musicians, so you ask them, why did you stop playing rock and roll? Says, yeah, for chicks, to get girls? Oh, wow. So lucky you could play a little bit on the side there, you know? It's incredible. I mean, I could not imagine. And there are all these groupies. I would never be with a groupie in my life. Not ever. And I could never imagine being with a complete stranger intimately overnight and then never seeing them again. And maybe some stranger will have my baby. Like, fuck that shit. Mm. Excuse my English. Screw that. And so I would not do that ever in my... And I guess I'm an exception to the norm, or the, if you're a stereotype singer.
You can't.
I cannot be stereotyped.
But you came from Finland too, so that was probably quite a contrast to all the American bands. So
yeah,
the what's it called?
The attitude.
The attitude. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. People are brought up in a different way over there, but yeah, I'm glad I'm from Finland because
Velkommen til Kjemperådet. Vi har fått inn et kjempeproblem her. Jeg leser. Jeg på ferie med familien. Det gøy, bortsett fra at jeg har gips på begge beina. Kan ikke bade eller dra noe sted. Jeg føler meg veldig begrenset. Hilsen begrenset far.
Begrenset far trenger ubegrensethet.
Yes.
Ja, kanskje ubegrenset data fra 399 med familierabatt hos Telenor.
Ja, det løser jo alt, bortsett fra det med badingen da. Se nye mobilabonnement på Telenor.no.
Yes!
I had been born in London or New York, I would not have seen half the things I've seen on during the trip from Finland to the world, you know. And I'm really happy that that's the way, it's been. And I think it's and with Hanoi Rocks also, it's part of the Finnish. It has something to do with the Finnish nature of, you know, like kind of like being stubborn and sticking to your guns and. You know, it's in the heart, and you know, there's a lot of heart there, even though they may not show it often. But Hanoi was actually good for the Finnish people in general, because when we started, people were really narrow-minded and intolerant in Finland. If it made any difference, anybody looked different, or you know, it was scary almost. You know, people got beat up for having long hair and stuff. Well, us, we had wearing makeup, and you know, the way we looked, it was like. Maybe people just went, what's this? You know, they're not hippies. We can't categorize. Hanoi Rocks defied all categories. You know, that's one of the best things about it, too. And to me, in rock and roll general, it's all about integrity and doing your own thing on your own terms. Then if you get successful after you've done it, you know, for the right reasons, then sure, I will get, I gladly have what comes along with it, you know. Money, fame, fine. That's okay, as long as it's done the right way, you know, on my own terms. But I wouldn't go for that at any price to get famous, and, you know, I wouldn't be happy. If I'd sold out, and even if I made millions and I was a billionaire or whatever, you know, I would be miserable still if I hadn't done it the right way, you know, if I'd taken the easy way out and tried to cheat, you know, in the process. And that's also probably part of being Finnish.
I think so. Yeah. But the Finnish people came really to love you and your band, and you're a superstar there still.
Yeah, now
maybe more than ever.
Actually, yeah, I think it's become such a thing that, I mean, also being part of the Voice of Finland show now for the fifth season, which I really enjoy doing. As long as I enjoy doing it, I keep doing it. And it keeps me in touch with young, you know, today's music and young kids. And that show, actually, we do help people, singers, and the coaching continues after the cameras are off, after the show. You know, we become friends with singers and all of us now, all the coaches now, Tarja Turunen and Red Rama and Olli Lindholm. There's a great vibe between us and chemistry, and also the musical scale is vast, what we cover from all different styles that we have, you know. So it's a good, it's actually a show that does help singers, and nobody gets dissed or anything. It's sort of, other formats like that, to me, were really, it's infuriating when I see them like mock people and say, oh yeah, don't quit your day job. And, you know, nobody should ever tell that. They should never tell anybody that, you know, especially young people, that you're not good enough or anything like that, you know. So that's why I love doing The Voice. At first I turned it down, but then the musical director of the band called me. He's a friend of mine. And he said, Michael, you may want to reconsider it. Let me explain a little bit more about it. And I said, okay, go ahead. And I thought, well, yeah, this will be good, actually. This will actually show, kill him with kindness, basically. And so I like doing that, but there on that show, you can only be yourself. So people are seeing that on TV, and they came to like me. Also, I think it has to do with my autobiography. The book came out. I thought either I'm going to completely estrange people and alienate everybody, or people are going to appreciate the fact that I was completely honest about a lot of stuff. And the question was, how am I going to tell about all these crazy things I've done in the past without influencing some of my fans? That I don't want one fan, any of my fans, to do something stupid because I've done it, you know. So I was very careful about how I there's no glorifying this, you know, getting messed up or anything like that. And I never wanted to get messed up when I experimented on things. It was like soul searching and learning. And as long as I went through that period and got over it and moved on, left it behind, then it was okay. So I'm still here to listen to you tell me about it.
But you had a small comeback with Hanoi 2. Buried it properly in 2009?
2009, yeah. You know, it was buried alive. It was buried. See, that was not a reunion. It was a rebirth. And it was when me and Andy got kind of reacquainted in Finland, after he'd moved there before me, and when I moved back to Finland from Manhattan in 95, 96, a couple of years after I'd moved in there, I ran into Andy, and we kind of got to know each other in a different way. Well, my late wife had just passed away, and Andy had an accident falling off a third-story balcony, and he was like, the doctor said he'll never walk, and I mean, it was a miracle he survived, you know, that he lives, right? Now he's walking, you know. So we kind of, it was based on this kind of tragic events, but we got to know each other in a new way, and he had learned to respect my contribution, my songwriting talents as well. So it was interesting to me to see what we could accomplish. We thought, call it Monroe McCoy, whatever, and then we thought, wait a minute, Hanoi Rocks is the coolest name that there is. And I thought about it very long and very hard. I thought about it, then should we use the name? Then I thought, yeah. It was me and Andy came up with the name, and it just would be a shame that we couldn't use it because of this accident and all. And so, yeah, why not? But it was really me and Andy and the rest of the guys. More, I mean, the best lineup was with Connie Bloom and AC Christel in the band with Laku. But we kind of, you know, it was fun for a while, and I was prepared to do that for the rest of my life. But then it came to a point after the third album that wasn't, like, it wasn't fun anymore, and I wanted to keep it fresh and keep it real. So I called Andy. I said, maybe it's time to put this to bed. He says, yeah, I feel the same. Let's just finish it honorably and with the band's integrity intact, and no fighting or slinging shit in the press or anything like that. It was just, let's do a few farewell tours and, you know, thank you, people. Yes, that's it. And now the band's put to rest, to its permanent rest. with his integrity intact, so I'm good. That's good. That's all good. I'm relieved that it ended up good. And me and Sammy ran into each other in 2009 in Finland, and he was there playing with the New York Dolls, and he said, oh, yeah, I'd like to work with you again. I was like, wow, okay. Well, I was going to restart my solo career, but this is, like, great news. I said, wow, there's, like, almost half the band there. My blood brother, my best friend, Sammy, who throughout the years has always been there, you know, best buddy and the greatest bass player you can imagine, can ever hope for. So we started putting this band together, and here we are, 5 years later, stronger than ever.
I'm looking forward to seeing the show tonight.
Same
I haven't
here.
Seen you before, so...
You have never seen me before?
No.
Okay.
So I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Okay, yeah, thank you. It'll be good, I guess. I mean, there's not much you can do there with that stage, but yeah, every show will be special, yeah. I'm glad.
Do we have time still? I don't know.
Well, the guy, not really much, but if we wind down, I mean, was that the main question? I mean, that.
I just let you talk because I think it's more important that you talk than
I well, that was the story in a nutshell. My career, basically. So.
You told me the whole career in 20 minutes.
That's right. Right.
And do you? Have any really good stories you could share with the listeners, like a crazy one or a funny one or a good one?
I can leave that to other bands, as someone like some of those hair metal bands, they'll tell you all about that. crazy stuff. I would never do anything stupid like smash up a hotel room or stuff like that, because you have to pay for it anyways.
But funny stuff do happen when you're on tour.
Oh yeah, all kinds of funny stuff happen, but we gotta. Yeah, is that the next interview? Okay, cool.
Okay, then
we're winding down. We're winding down. Last
question.
Then, so funny stuff.
Then we have to choose the songs, the 10 songs.
All right.
That's most important.
Yeah. Give me a minute on that. Funny stuff. I can't think of anything right now. there's a book about Hanoi Rocks that I'm just reading through. It's going to be in English. It's going to be out in. That book that came out in Finnish in 2009, it's going to be out in the world in English.
I should read the Finnish version to.
Read my autobiography.
To fix my Finnish language.
Yeah, read my autobiography, the updated version.
Yeah.
I'll give you the 10 songs. Hang on, let's.
And then I'll make you do a jingle for the show. And
okay, first
take a
song.
Pick the photo.
Okay, first song is a jingle and photo. Okay. Where's the person? Are you comfortable there? Good. You can hang on for a couple of more minutes.
Thank you.
Please, thanks. Van called Virgin, the Virgin Marys. Mm-hmm. The Virgin Marys. Are you writing this down?
Yep. Or you can just.
The Virgin Marys, a song called Bang, Bang, Bang.
Yep.
Then what else? This. Should you. You probably won't find this. People know AC/DC so much. Let's see. There's the Brian Johnson stuff.
Is it Jordy?
Yeah, it is. Keep on rocking.
Yeah.
Yeah, keep on rocking.
With Jordy.
Yeah, with Jordy, keep on rocking.
Mm-hmm.
Heavy Metal Kids, Gary Holton,
Mm-hmm.
Listen to him sing. That's him.
Oh, it's so different.
Yeah, he's singing like that. He's actually singing. Hang on, She's No Angel. Delirious. Yeah, the heavy metal kids.
Mm-hmm.
Delirious.
Yep.
Yeah, ZZ Top. This song, Rhythmine.
Rhythmine.
Yeah. Yep. Right. That's the title track of this song.
All right. Then we have 10 songs.
Good.
And then
wait a minute. Warrior Soul.
We
have to put a Warrior Soul. Hang on. Is it Love Destroy? Punk.
Punk and Belligerent.
Yeah.
Du har hørt et intervju med Michael Monroe som ble litt ivrig der på slutten, laget for Jernverket I 2016. Spillelista ligger på jernverket.com. Neste vekka får du høre en live-podcast med St. Karloff og Molten Gold. Den spilles inn på Rockin Oslo I kveld den 25. januar. Så hvis du I nærheten, det bare å komme inn om klokka 18.30. Det blir konsert med begge bandene etterpå, og mitt så kommer opptaket ut neste fredag. Og du, jeg må minne om at du får kjøpt Alskens plata I nettbutikken til Indie Recordings, Jernverket sin sponsor. Alle jernverkelytterne får 20% rabatt på sitt første kjøp, hvis du oppgir rabattkoden Jernverket når du handler. Og kikk gjerne innom Jernverket Recommends hvis du ikke vet hva du vil ha. Abonner på Jernverket podcast via podcast-app eller gå inn på jernverket.com. Du på iTunes, så må du gjerne legge igjen 5 stjerner I anmeldelse. Det gjelder på Facebook også. Og hvis du tilfelligvis har et produkt å selge, så kan du ta kontakt. Kanskje du kan annonsere eller spons via Jernverket. Følg med på Instagram og Facebook. Der skjer det mye I konkurranser blant annet. Jeg heter Helle Stenkløv og gir deg et nytt eller gammelt hardrock-intervju hver fredag. Vi høres!